line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
The NFL draft, is in the books, and we've got opinions. The NBA playoffs continue on. We've also got opinions, especially when it comes to Michael's 76ers. Welcome into hour two of the Lombardi Line, presented by DraftKings. We're live on VSiN and DraftKings Network. Michael Lombardi and Stormy Bonantoni with you. And I feel like I was getting ahead of myself there, thinking about NBA, because as I tee you up for today's edition of What's on Michael's Mind, I know it's 76ers related. Where are we going today?
Well, I just, it's on my mind. I don't think you can blame the Philadelphia 76er fans for selling their tickets in a secondary market. It happens all the time. The Knicks fans are passionate. I think the Knicks fans believe in their team. All due respect to Mr. Embiid, I'm not sure the Philadelphia 76er fans, the one that really understand, not the Twitter ones, that they're buying the team. They're not buying anything. I mean, we've all seen the movie before, Stormy. We've seen the movie of we're not going anywhere. You know, we don't have the right complement around Embiid. We don't have him. He's hurt. We don't have the right pieces, yada, 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 all that. And so there is kind of an air of negativity or pessimism, if you will, around the 76ers, which to me on a beautiful Sunday afternoon, if you were all in and they had some Villanova players, which they refused to want to have, maybe they would come in. But I think it's really wrong to blame the fans. I really do. I think it's wrong because they have supported the team. And there's no better sound, Stormy. There is no better sound in all my life besides listening to Sienna talk or my grandkids talk. The greatest sound of all is the sound of silence when you win on the road or you quiet fans down with your play on the court or on the field. And all they had to do was take care of business. All he had to do was show up in the fourth quarter. Instead, he goes to the press conference. The rebounds went the wrong way. You know, it's the fans. It's not the fans, brother. It's you. It's you. Nobody's buying it. You can't con anybody anymore. Either get in shape, play your heart out, play the fourth quarter, because everybody has numbers on you in the fourth quarter that are ridiculous. Like in every series, you've gone less than what you did in the regular season. And if you know anything about the NBA, it's all about the playoffs. So that's on my mind. I think it's unfair to Philadelphia fans to have to take that negativity from a guy who's really given them nothing back. They got him the MVP. He's the only MVP in the history of the sport who's never gotten to a final.
It was funny listening to his comments after the game about the fans, because he led his comment by saying, "I'm not trying to call our fans out," and then proceeded to say, "I've been here for 10 years, and yeah, this kind of pisses me off because Philly is supposed to be considered a sports town. They've always shown up, and I don't think this should happen. It's not okay." And like I mentioned in hour one, Michael, if he thought that the fans weren't out in this game, just wait until they go to the Garden coming up tomorrow, because it's going to be working against them the entire time. And already on the court, you talk about it a ton. They looked slow. They couldn't get any rebounds. The second chance points are always going on the other side. It just looks like every step of the way when these games have been close, the Knicks have wanted it more and the 76ers haven't been there. So, and your boy, Joel Embiid hasn't been there.
I think you're right, Stormy, and I don't think the team buys into it. I mean, Maxey plays his tail off, but here's what I will make a prediction, and I don't know if DraftKings will put this bet up yet, but we're about 60 days away from Joel Embiid requesting to be traded. We're going to see that. That's the next step. Like, when I first saw that he was blaming the fans, I text a very prominent NBA enthusiast who covers the game. I said, this is now the beginning of I want to be traded, which has been coming along, right? They can't fit. It's not going to be the team. It's not going to be his fault. It's going to be the team's fault for not surrounding him with the right players when they've been trying for 8 years. When Larry Brown went to the 76ers, and I love Larry. I wish I could ask Larry what he thought. But Larry went to the Sixers. He said to the team, look, instead of playing to Iverson, instead of playing 1-on-5, why don't we play 5-on-5? So instead of you being the point guard, we'll make you the off guard. And so everybody else is involved, and he trades for Eric Snow. Well, he figured out how to build a team around Iverson. They've yet to do that with Embiid because he's an impossible player to build a team around because he's not a low post player. He's a small forward.
this is going to be a big hole for the 76ers to climb out of if they can. They have never come back from down 3-1 in a series, and that's the position they'll be in tomorrow night. The Knicks, a 4-point home favorite, total 203.5. With that, we also have 3 games coming up in the NBA tonight, Michael. And just before we get into some NFL draft stuff, any thoughts on any of those games that intrigue you? Right now, the Celtics are a 10.5-point road favorite in Miami. OKC laying just 5 in what could be a closeout game in New Orleans against the Pelicans. The Lakers getting 7 against the Nuggets, another situation that could be a closeout game, but at least the Lakers didn't get swept. At least they put that freaking 11-0 record to bed.
I actually watched that game really closely, and I just felt like Denver didn't shoot well in the game. You know, I felt like, didn't you get the sense, and maybe you were doing your USFL, but didn't you get the sense that Denver was going to make the comeback and win the game late? And they just could never make shots. And give the Lakers credit, they fought hard. But this, now we're back in altitude. I don't see it. I think 7.5 is a lot of points. I really do. To me, I would be tempted to take the Lakers in the points, but I don't trust it. I really don't.
Yeah, I think the Nuggets probably win and close this out. 7 does feel like a lot, especially considering LA has had a first half lead in every game in this series. And quite frankly, maybe that's the play. Maybe you look at the first half spread for LA or the first half money line there and get a plus money price. But again, those 3 games coming up tonight as the NBA postseason continues. We've talked a lot about the NFL draft, and we will throughout the course of the hour. Mike Pritchard is going to join us a little bit later. Former Atlanta Falcons. So very curious to get his opinions on his former team. Hey, go ahead.
Yeah, me too. Is he gonna defend this, or what are we gonna do here? I can't wait to hear what Michael's got up his sleeve. I don't know if he's ever been on a team that has 2 quarterbacks that they're counting on. So we'll see.
We'll see if he puts on his Danny O hat. But I wanted to ask you about the New York Giants, Michael, because not only did they not elect to take a quarterback with that number 6 overall pick in this class, but they're also one of 3 teams that did not draft an offensive lineman. And that is despite this group giving up 85 sacks last year, was the most that any team had allowed in the last 40 years. But I'm curious, in your opinion, like, this is a team that, I don't know if they haven't drafted offensive linemen well, or they just haven't been able to develop them well. Like, is Evan Neal a miss? Is John Michael Schmitz going to be a miss? Because they've had offensive line problems for the last decade, but even recent history, these guys haven't worked out. So how do you feel about the Giants and their O-line situation?
Well, they put the spin out today that they were never trading up for Drake May. I know this is going to shock you, Stormy. They were never trading up for Drake May. Their interest was always Joe Alt. Really? 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 Okay. You want us to believe this? You really want us to believe this, that you wanted to trade up for Alt, but you then picked the receiver at 6. You didn't think Latham was good enough? Okay? Like you thought Alt was that much of a player? Why wouldn't you have traded? I mean, if you were offering the package that you offered to New England, why didn't you just offer that package to Arizona? They would have done that. Arizona would have gone to 6 for you. They would have no problem going to 6 if you were going to throw in next year's 1. So, like, it's just all this stuff. You should never, and I want to underscore the word never, you should never leave a draft, and I've done it, so I've made this mistake, I've learned from it, without drafting an offensive lineman. They're the bloodline to your team. You've got to, right? Now, I know they've signed Runyon to play right guard. They signed Aaron Stinney to play left guard. Good luck, right? Mm-hmm. Illuminor, the Raiders' right tackle last year, is now going to come in. It's hard. Evan Neal did not play well. They have one legitimate offensive lineman in Andrew Thomas. Now, whether Michael Schmidt can come through, we'll see. But they can't protect. And we've had Chris Sims on the show many times, and he's talked about the lack of protection for the quarterback. And this is why the Giants, over the last 10 years, are the only NFC East team that has never won the NFC East, even though it rotates every season. And they have the least amount of wins of any team. The Giants have a selection problem. They have an evaluation problem. They don't want to admit it because they love their picks. They love Daniel Jones. They love it, right? I just think, to me, this is a hard one. And when you have a line like they have, I think it's going to be really hard.
It just throws me for a loop, Michael, because you think you give up 85 sacks. The offensive line allowed 27 on the interior. Like, these are guys that just have not been able to hold up. And then you draft Malik Nabers, so you say that you're investing in Daniel Jones, but he's also a guy that has a pretty decent injury history and is coming off a torn ACL. And you're saying, let's just run it back with the guys that wrecked all of our quarterbacks last year? I don't understand it. And maybe if they have an evaluation problem, they're just saying, okay, let's hands off and try to get better development internally with our coaching staff and see what we can make out of what we have. But this one was the head scratcher for me big time.
Well, it goes back to what I've said to my friends who were at the Raiders when they traded for Davante Adams. And it goes here for my friend Brian Daboll. I mean, the last position you fix on your team is the wide receiver. Are they going to be able to get the ball to Neighbors? I think Neighbors is a fabulous player, right? But Wendell Robinson was a good player for him, too. Jalin Hyatt got behind the defense for him last year, too. They just couldn't get the ball to him. You know, now, you know, Waller's retired, so who's going to be the tight end? Look, the Giants are one of the few franchises in NFL history that have always been a size speed team, offensive and defensive linemen. That's how they won with George Young as the general manager. And they've gone away from that blueprint, and they've gotten into some areas where they have no business being. And they're back to those days in the 70s when they weren't very good.
A playoff team just 2 years ago in year one under Brian Daboll. Now they're a minus 550 price to miss the playoffs altogether yet again. They're 10-1 in the division, the longest shot by far. Way things sit odds-wise in the NFC East. Dallas, a plus 125 favorite nationally. Eagles, plus 135. Washington Commanders, plus 750. And then, as I mentioned, the Giants, the longest shot as a double digit there. We're going to hit the break. When we come back, some folks stepping into the old office of Michael Lombardi coming off of the NFL draft, and lots more to get to. Excited to have Mike Pritchard back on the show this week. We'll be right back on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
If you're looking to bet the NBA smarter tonight, VSiN.com has you covered. In addition to best bets article laid out each and every day from our guy, Jonathan Von Tobel, we've also got top plays based on betting splits, power ratings, and trends from our own Steve Mackinnon. Plenty of daily MLB, NHL postseason action, everything you need in one-stop shop at VSiN.com.
The appointments are lined up.
You waiting for somebody in there?
Got an appointment.
And it's not about what you want to hear, but what you need to hear.
It's not personal, son. It's strictly business.
It's time you and me had a private talk winger. Step into my office.
And step into my office with Michael Lombardi. Mr. Lombardi, we'll see you now.
All right, Michael. Let's talk Kirk Cousins off the ledge here, because 6 weeks ago, he signed a deal with the Atlanta Falcons for 4 years, $100 million guaranteed in the first three. Yet, instead of helping him out, giving him a little defensive support, Atlanta says, no, we are going to take Michael Penix Jr. at number 8 overall. Raheem Morris, their head coach, said Kirk does not have to look over his shoulder every time he throws a bad pass. But we know when he throws a bad pass, the fans are going to be coming out and screaming Michael Penix Jr. What does Cousins need to do to secure his QB1 spot, Michael? And how would you advise him given this situation?
Well, I think, Kurt, you're in a really tough spot, because what you want to do, and I'm sure what you had planned to do, was try to develop the team around your characteristics, right? You want your personality within the team. And I think ultimately this becomes now everybody becomes a general manager. Everybody evaluates practice. Who's better? Who does this? You know, they'll say it'll raise the competition level and they'll get the best out of you. I'm not sure that's the case, because the connectivity between you and the team has to have no doubt, right? The second string quarterback is always the least talented quarterback. It's always pretty clear. In this case, it may not be clear, because this kid can throw the football. So what I think you have to do is balance yourself really easily. Difficulty. You've got to show support to the young kid, because if you try to alienate him, the rest of the team's not going to buy into you. They're going to see it. And then you also have to command the team. And you and Raheem have to sit in a room and really go over it and understand that, because there should be some kind of understanding now that he is part of the team. And how do you embrace it? Because what's going to happen in scout team is he's going to look really good, because he's going to look at cards. You throw the ball here, you throw the ball there. There's no pass rush, right? And the players are going to see this, and they're going to say, wow, this kid's really good. So Raheem's got to do a really good job of reinforcing everything to you, and so does Zach Robinson. But you've got to be upfront and honest with everybody. You got to let them know how you feel.
I don't like to say I feel bad for guys that are making the kind of money that Kirk Cousins is, but I feel bad for him in this situation. I feel bad for Michael Penix Jr. in this situation, too, because he might be, if not the most, one of the most NFL-ready quarterbacks of this draft class. And now we hear that he could be sitting for 4 or 5 years if things go well with Kirk. So just very interesting situation. Another quarterback off the board early. Drake May goes number 3 overall to the New England Patriots, Michael. But there is belief and thought process, right, that he doesn't have to go in right away. He needs time to develop and could sit behind Jacoby Brissett this year. Take a listen to Jerod Mayo after the selection.
I don't think many rookies are ready to just jump in and play. And look, at the end of the day, our philosophy is the best players will play. We're not sitting here saying that Drake is our starting quarterback. I think he understands that. He understands the things that he has to get better at. And, you know, with coaching and once again, the hard work and the coaches that we have, the support system from ownership, you know, I think he has a chance to go out there and really play at a high level. You can talk about potential all you want to until you reach it. It really doesn't matter.
That's what my dad always says. Potential doesn't mean blank yet, right? Like, it doesn't mean anything. So what does May need to do to reach that potential, Michael?
Well, he needs to go back and start all over, you know, like just go in there with an open mind and try to learn how to play the position the way they want him to play it and really spend a lot of time on his fundamentals and his footwork. Like, he's got to really become a technically sound player and not just think he can do it with his athleticism. And don't be in a rush. Not saying don't compete, but just don't be in a rush. Take everything in. Learn from as much as you can. Take mental reps as much as physical reps because you're going to need it. You're going to need it badly. And go in there, keep your mouth shut, head down, and just do what they tell you to do and work twice as hard at it. And then after 6 months, we're going to see where this goes. Think of yourself as you're on this giant weight loss program. It doesn't matter where you start. It matters where we're going to be in 3 months, right? And so that's going to be the key. You've got to show improvement to yourself every 3 months. I think that's got to be what your goal is. Your goal isn't who's the starter. Your goal is how do I improve?
Football version of a no-carb diet for Drake May. Got to keep it up. Absolutely.
There you go.
Absolutely. How about Bo Nix here, Michael? Because despite most mocks having Bo Nix as a fringe first rounder, he ends up going number 12 overall to the Denver Broncos. Sean Payton calling him super intelligent and pushed against the assumptions that Denver could have drafted him later. Compared it to the Chiefs situation, taking Patrick Mahomes when they did. Said, oh yeah, people were mad at them, said you could have gotten him later. No, you couldn't. How can Nix live up to that number 12 draft ranking?
Just stop thinking about it, because it only matters how you play, not where you get picked. You can't make anybody happy. Look at Brock Purdy. Seventh pick, last player picked in the draft. He can't make people happy. People still doubt him. So don't worry about what other people think. The only person you really care about is the reason you're in Denver is because what Sean Payton thought. That's the only guy you got to make happy. You got to make him happy, and you got to do what he tells you to do. Everybody else is just block out the noise. Don't even listen to it. And if you win games, you probably won't get any credit because people have their minds made up about you. So they're going to write that it's the rest of the team that did it, like they did with Brock Purdy. You got to take the Brock Purdy approach. Deal with your teammates, connect with them, and just listen to your head coach and block out all the noise. The people that don't know are the ones you can't let affect you.
Kevin O'Connell, head coach of the Minnesota Vikings, steps into your office, Michael, this offseason. They added Sam Darnold on a one-year, $10 million contract, and then in the draft traded up to 10 to grab J.J. McCarthy. GM Kwesi Adofo-Mensah told reporters that Minnesota would not rush McCarthy's development. So if you are Kevin O'Connell, what should he be looking for and from in J.J. McCarthy if he plans on giving him the reins of the offense at some point?
Well, if he plans on getting him the reins, he's got to give him everything. Like, you can't have two offenses. You can't have the Sam Darnold offense, and you can't have the J.J. McCarthy. You got to see if he can handle it. Volume is what gets most quarterbacks, right? Volume. How much volume you get put on your plate to process and deal with. This is what Sean Payton was talking about when he was talking about Nix's ability intellectually. It's the volume. How much volume, how much of the offense can you handle? Well, if you want to win games and Darnold can handle a lot of it, McCarthy's going to have to handle as much of it as he can. And don't worry about if he makes mistakes. Like, that's the one thing I would tell every one of these young quarterbacks. Make as many mistakes in practice as you possibly can, because they call it practice. Just don't make two mistakes in a row. Just don't make the same mistake over and over again. That's when you lose your credibility. That's when you lose your support system. Learn from your mistakes and move forward. And you have no timetable, JJ. All you have to do is learn what to do and then do it when you figure it out. And take your time, because they've got Darnold there to protect you. And don't try to become a hero overnight.
As much as I talked about J.J. McCarthy throughout this draft process and how I wasn't a believer, it's not that I'm not a believer in J.J. McCarthy. It's that I wasn't a believer in him being a top five pick. I think he's in a great situation in Minnesota. Have that time to learn and develop a little bit and see what he becomes. I'm excited for him with the Vikings. Let's go to Phoenix, though, Michael, where the Suns be struggling after getting swept from the Minnesota Timberwolves. Their GM, James Jones, is in the office after adding Bradley Beal to a team that already included Kevin Durant and Devin Booker. They are out. What's next for the Suns? What would you direct James Jones on for his path in order for them to contend with this big three?
I really like James and have great respect for him. And I think with James, what you have to do is be honest with yourself. Can you make another run with this team? What was wrong with this team that you could not beat Minnesota? And you know that guy in Minnesota who's becoming the second coming of Mr. Jordan is not going anywhere. So how are we going to get out of the West if we can't beat them? And I think you got to be really honest. And then once you're honest with yourself, how do you fix the problem? You can't get away from Beal's deal. Everybody told you, you know, you got to get Beal, you got to get Beal. You listened to it and it didn't work. Now you got to do what you think will work. And does that mean tear it down? Does that mean trade assets? You can't trade Durant. You're not going to be able to trade Beal. You don't want to trade Booker. I don't know how you solve the problems. You don't have any draft picks. So you got to sit down and say to yourself, either we sell off these picks, we sell off Durant and we sell off Beal and we'll eat the money to get picks and just go into the tank, or how do we piece it together? Your owner's not going to want to try to piece it together. He wants to win. But you and I both know old players don't get young.
I mentioned,
old players don't get better.
Yeah. Father Time's undefeated, as they say, unless you're Tom Brady. I said it once earlier, and I'll say it again, Michael. When Booker, KD, and Bradley Beal were on the floor together in this series, they were minus 51,
wow,
the worst of any three players on any team in the playoffs here so far. We're going to hit the break when we come back. VSiN's own Mike Pritchard, former NFL wide receiver, he'll join us, get his thoughts on his former Falcons selection at the top of the draft. We'll be back in a moment.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back into the Lombardi Line alongside former NFL executive Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you as we continue to break down our thoughts on the NFL draft over the weekend. Now that all of the names have been called, and to help us get into it a little bit farther, we welcome in VSiN's own Mike Pritchard, former NFL wide receiver, a guy who heard his name called early and who you will see has an Atlanta Falcons jersey behind him as a former member of the franchise. So you know where we got to start here, which was the biggest head scratcher for a number of people around the country when they heard Michael Penix Jr.'s name called at number 8 in this year's NFL draft. What was your reaction?
I wasn't shocked. I wasn't surprised either. It was just a roundabout way of what the Falcons are capable of doing. By the way, I'm thinking about taking that jersey down. I got two other jerseys I could put up there.
True.
I think Raheem Morris is back there and you're trying to stabilize a position. Maybe they want to project that they have a stable situation with the quarterback position now that they have Kirk Cousins and Michael Penix Jr., right? I don't know if they can make it work. We'll see. I don't know how front offices think a lot of times. Michael is the best to certainly convey that to everybody out there. But was he the best player available on the board? No. Was he the best quarterback in this draft at that position at that time? No. Is he a fit? When you have a right-handed quarterback in Kirk Cousins, okay, now you're going to switch to a left-handed quarterback in Michael Penix Jr. That doesn't bode well in the locker room, or it doesn't really jive well, because you're talking about two different offenses that way. So to sum it up and to answer your question, I don't know what the hell the Falcons were thinking, to be honest with you.
All right, so let's take it from your point of view. You've been in that locker room. For me as an executive, I want my quarterback to be the leader. I want him to be the hardest worker. I want the team to gravitate towards him. As Bill Walsh once told Steve Young, 1 minute to go, we're down by four. You go in that huddle, everybody believes you can execute. How does Atlanta create that dynamic when you have two players that one's incredibly talented, the other's played really well? How do they create that dynamic?
Well, it's going to be difficult. And it's a great point by you, Michael, because I think that's what Kirk Cousins was upset about. Not the fact that he's scared that this guy's going to take his position, but he's like, okay, I'm coming into a new situation at quarterback in Atlanta. How am I going to take over that locker room now if, you know, you're talking about the future with Michael Penix Jr., but the present and the here and now is with me. And I got to win over this locker room. I got to establish that credibility. So that's what makes it more difficult. I think when you have front offices with one plan, and then the locker room has a different plan, that doesn't work. You know, everybody has to be on the same page. And it just doesn't seem like everybody's on the same page right now. I'll take you back to when I was there. You know, Ken Harrod drafted Brett Favre. And in the locker room, we're like, man, this guy's a gunslinger. God, this guy is incredible. But yet Chris Miller was our starter and Jerry Glanville wanted Chris to be our starter. So we had to fight that for a little while. And you know, certainly Chris got hurt. Then they bring in Billy Joe Tolliver. We go to the playoffs. But I tell you what, I think as players, we missed out an opportunity to play with a supreme talent. And Herrock recognized that. It's just the coaches didn't give that opportunity to us as players to play that out.
Well, and I keep thinking too, Pritch, from the Michael Penix Jr. vantage of this, how excited you must be to be a top 10 pick. And then you realize where you're going in the situation with Atlanta, where you're already 24 years old. If right. Kirk Cousins does have success, to Terry Fontenot's point after the draft was over, talking about, like, hey, if he sits 4 or 5 years, that means things are going well. Okay, that means you're going to pick up a fifth-year option without having seen him, and your quarterback's 50 years old now. Okay, he's only going to be 28, but still, you get what I'm saying here. It's a very unique, sure. unique situation that they did after, you know, just 6 weeks ago investing in someone else. I feel for Michael Penix in this situation, too.
Right, and those are headaches that are going to happen for the front office, I believe, because if Michael Penix feels like he needs to be on the field, he's going to force that issue. And Michael Lombardi just brought up, you know, the Steve Young, Joe Montana thing. I mean, Steve Young kind of forced himself onto the field, yeah. And that had to happen. And so they traded away Joe Montana, which was the right move for everybody. But, if you're Michael Penix, you're not going to want to sit for 3 or 4 years. And I don't think Atlanta even thought about that.
How do you develop Michael Penix? That's another question,
that's another
Mike,
one.
Right? So usually when you have a void at quarterback, you're developing the quarterback. You have a bridge player that the team knows, and then you're giving this guy all the reps you can possibly give. But right. How do you give this guy reps? How do you make him a better player? Here's what I do know, and no one said this, including myself, but it just came to me. The offenses for Kirk Cousins and the offense for Michael Penix are two entirely different offenses.
Exactly.
I'm not saying Kirk Cousins can't throw the ball down the field, but Kirk Cousins is really a pure West Coast guy. This Michael Penix is an over route, deep nine, you know, hard. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a different offense. It just doesn't make sense on any basis.
Right. It doesn't make sense. And everybody's got a plan until they got punched in the mouth, mm-hmm. right? And, Atlanta's going to get punched in the mouth sooner than later. I don't know what scared them. The run on quarterbacks, you know, wasn't even there. I don't know if they were even going to anticipate that happening either, but I can't explain it. You know, they've gone offensive player year after year recently too, which, you know, you're stockpiling a lot of players on that side of the ball. But at what point is your plan going to be realized? At what point are you going to be able to implement whatever plan you think you have?
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know who was trying to trade up for Michael Penix at that point, right? Like, they had their choice of whoever was on the board. All the talk about trading up was about J.J. McCarthy or Drake May or even the Raiders and Jaden Daniels. So just very unique and high expectations, nonetheless, for this Atlanta Falcons team moving into 2024. They're an odds-on favorite in the division, 9.5 win total, minus 300 to make the playoffs this year. Let's look ahead to your position and where some of these wide receivers landed. Any particular landing spot or fit that you found was maybe the best of that first round?
You know, a lot of people are talking about Ladd McConkey going to the Chargers, which that's interesting. That's intriguing. I think Adunze going to Chicago, just because of the injury history with Keenan, right? I think you're going to see that guy on the field, and you're going to see him in a lot of positions to make plays, too, with that dynamic quarterback. Neighbors, good luck in New York. good luck out there. I hope New York can bounce back because, you know, he's a great talent too. But Marvin Harrison Jr., the thing that stood out to me about this draft was it was all chalk, right? You think about the mocks and you think about how it really played out. Even the trade with JJ going to Minnesota, a lot of people anticipated that. And so I wonder if that's going to be predictive for us as bettors later on. That everything in the league is projecting to us as chalk right now. So as far as these receivers, I mean, the position is wide open. I think rookie of the year is going to be a competitive situation too. Bowers going to the Raiders is really intriguing because of the middle of the field. And when you have a Davante Adams on one side as well. So the whole position as a whole, Stormy, certainly there's an importance to it. And we saw that the NFL played that out with the draft. But, you know, I think there's a lot of guys in some unique situations and some great situations for later on this year.
Don't you think Harrison would be, other than Caleb Williams, would be the best play for offensive rookie of the year? He's going to get the ball. I mean, there's no question. And he's one of the best covered receivers in the draft. He's got great body control, great hands. Even if he's covered, he's open. He's gonna produce a lot of numbers, don't you think, Mike?
Yeah, I do. I really do. He's the only guy, right? He's the only show in town, really, as they say. And if you're the only show in town, you're going to be featured. And so I think Marvin Harrison Jr. is going to get that opportunity. Over in Chicago, you wonder if it does come together with Caleb and certainly commit and everybody, they have an offense, and Rome is lost in a shuffle. Rome is that Devontae Smith kind of player, right? Nobody's going to pay attention to him as they're paying attention to AJ Brown and others. And all of a sudden Rome is crushing you one-on-one against somebody else, or same thing with T Higgins. And you think about Jamar Chase. I mean, the combinations of the younger players that Chicago has right now allows for Rome to be that surprise guy. But I agree with you. I mean, Marvin Harrison, he's a show. He's a big show in town, and he's definitely going to be featured that way in Arizona.
30 seconds, Pritch. We'll throw that Denver Broncos jersey up in the corner for a moment. One of your former teams. How'd you like the Bo Nix pick?
I was shocked by it. I didn't think it was going to happen. I think the run on quarterbacks scared Sean Payton and all that, which I don't know why. But they could have got him later on if they wanted to. But that's the guy that they wanted, so you can't fault him for that. Can they make it work? It's a high precision passing game. It's a short passing game. Bo Nix has been used to that for a number of years now. So maybe Sean Payton can make that work.
Yeah, we shall see. You're awesome, Pritch. Great to have you.
Great to be back with you guys.
Thanks, Pritch.
Thank you.
Mike Pritchard, former NFL wide receiver. Always appreciate his time. We're going to hit the break, wrapping things up on the Lombardi line next. We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From now through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays. We love those SGPs, live betting, odds boosts, and more. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use our code VSIN. New customers that do bet $5 and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. That's VSIN, V-S-I-N, only on DraftKings Sportsbook. The crown is yours. Travis Kelce getting older, but he and the Chiefs believe, Michael, still plenty of football left as he reportedly signs a 2-year extension that will make him the highest paid tight end in the league, according to Ian Rappaport. What do you make of the news?
Well, I mean, look, I've said this many times about Travis Kelce, that he has done the Chiefs a great service by taking money as a tight end when in reality he's really a wide receiver. And he could easily argue that he should be paid one of the highest paid receivers in all of football. And he's done a great job of not having that on his plate. But, you know, I think this is more of a payback than it is a pay forward, because he has done that and he's entitled to this. And I think that he will, but he's certainly not the same player he was 2 years ago. It's not there. Nobody doubles him as much anymore, but he's still effective. That doesn't mean he's not. He's just not the, oh my gosh, you know, what are we, how we handle him? We got to have the right matchup. But I think this is really a great gesture by the Chiefs of paying him back for all the years that he's really been one of the few players in the league, like Tom Brady and like others, that have taken less money, even though he could have held out for a lot more. Trust me. He is a legitimate receiver. And for him to average 14.3 on an average salary when Christian Kirk's getting 18, when some of these guys are getting 30, it's bizarre. It's bizarre. But because he's labeled a tight end, he can't really argue outside the franchise. But we all know what it is, and I think this is a reflection of that.
Sure. Had 7 straight 1,000-yard seasons prior to this past year where he came up just shy, 984. But give Travis Kelce credit, because even though this season you could tell that he wasn't the same player as you referenced, he came alive in the postseason, right, and did what he needed to do in crunch time in those big games to put the Chiefs in a position where they are trying to three-peat as Super Bowl champions for the first time in NFL history.
Well, and he's going to be 35 going into next year. And we know that usually that wall is going to be hard for him, because here's what he was winning with. He was winning with his quickness and his speed. And if he can't do that, then all of a sudden the matchups don't favor him. But I think the Chiefs have changed what they do offensively. You know, they're not asking him to be the guy. They're running the ball more. And Mahomes is still able to get him the football. But great route runner. Look, the guy's a great receiver. He's a Hall of Fame receiver. He's not truly a tight end. But unfortunately, he had to take that money as a tight end. He's been underpaid every year.
The Chiefs, by the way, Michael, over the last couple weeks have leapfrogged the San Francisco 49ers as favorites to win the Super Bowl and to three-peat, as I mentioned there. What did you think about the draft and the way this team is put together as they do look to make history?
Well, I mean, the Chiefs still have a wide open now. They drafted a kid from BYU to be the left tackle. Can he be the left tackle as a rookie? We're going to find out, right? We knew the Chiefs went into this draft with really a problem, and I can't say Kingsley's name, but they drafted him to be the left tackle in the second round. They traded up to get him. They had to. I'm not as, you know, everybody's all worthy. He's so fast. Well, when he comes in the game, everybody's going to say, watch out for Worthy running a deep route. You know, he's 160 pounds. Tyreek Hill was not a light player. He played running back at Oklahoma State. He was hard to tackle. He was a great running back at Oklahoma State. Had quickness and speed. And so, you know, this is an apple and an orange conversation. And look, just because the Chiefs liked him doesn't necessarily mean they get the receiver position dead right every time. Sky Moore hasn't played nearly his level of a second-round pick. Hardeman never played his level of a second-round pick. So, look, and our boy Tony, you know, even though, you know, we know he's still a good player because Danny O said that there's only been 3 busts at the receiver position and didn't have Tony in there. So we know he's obviously a good player, but he don't play very well for them.
The left tackle, by the way, Sumataia Kingsley's last name. I was practicing that.
See, you scouted. You knew him. You were on that sideline in Provo. You were just firing that bad boy off. I love it, Stormy.
I know BYU all too well. Another contract, Michael, that got done. Patriots and defensive tackle Christian Barmore agreed to a 4-year extension. Max value, $92 million, $41.8 in guarantees. It is the largest non-Tom Brady contract in Patriots franchise history.
It's really somewhat remarkable that they would. I don't know how Barmore got there, you know, because Belichick can't draft at all. We know this. They've signed mostly all the players that were on his team. So Barmore must just have come because he wanted to go shopping at Patriot Place. I mean, clearly that's the case, because there's no chance, because the Kraft family has been putting out for 4 or 5 years that Belichick can't draft. I mean, that's been the rhetoric that's come out, and it's captured the nation. That's all everybody says. You can win Super Bowls, but you can't draft. Would you rather be a great drafter or win a Super Bowl? You decide. So for me, this is shocking. And the fact that they've signed almost all the players that were on the team last year, I mean, it's kind of comical, right? It's kind of comical. And again, you know, what surprised me so far, Stormy, is how there's been no attempt to sign a kicker. Like, Ryland was one of the worst players in the league last year. Now, he may be great in practice, and they feel that way, but when it's come time to make a kick, you can't trust him. I mean, the Rams even were saying to themselves, and I think the Rams have were not quite as bad as the Patriots, but the Rams knew they had to get a kicker. They drafted that kid in the sixth round. They couldn't go another year without a kicker.
Michael,
it's tough to go with a rookie kicker.
Yeah, they need to go to the UFL, I'm not kidding, and sign Jacob Bates
and get
ASAP.
That kid.
Yes, that is what they need to do. There are two kickers in the UFL this year that should get NFL jobs.
Can you sign those guys now?
No, not yet.
Can you sign them now, Stormy, for the few? You have to wait.
Yep.
So maybe that's what I mean, I would pay that kid whatever it took to get him if I were the Patriots.
Yep.
Whatever it took.
Hitting a couple of 64-yard field goals in the UFL, just throwing that out there. Last thing before we head out of here, Michael, and we referenced it a little bit earlier, but I know it's top of your mind, is all of this conversation about the Giants and Joe Alt and a potential smokescreen that's the guy they really wanted all along. They weren't going to take a quarterback. Take us through that situation, your thoughts on it.
Well, I mean, okay, they can say it, all right, but once New England declared that they weren't interested in trading the pick and they were going to pick Drake May, the Giants retreated like a bad army. And they had no interest in trading with Arizona, and Alt would have been on the board. They offered look, I think even ESPN reported the offer, the package that they offered the Cardinals, they offered the Patriots. They offered a number one pick in the next year. You don't do that if the Patriots don't want him and you want Alt, then why wouldn't you just offer the same thing to the Cardinals? Why are we insulting my intelligence? Just admit it. You spent so much time on the quarterbacks. We know you did. J.J. McCarthy even admitted he spent a zillion time with them. So, like, now you're going to come out after the draft and say it was all Alt? Well, you never made an attempt to get to four. You never made an attempt to get to five. You never made an attempt to get anywhere. You only wanted three, and when three wouldn't trade you, you went home. And then remember what John Mara said at the owners' meetings. If they like a quarterback, if they're in love, well, I'll sign off on it. Well, they did. They loved May. So I find this really hard. But this comes out now. What is this now? This is trying to get your quarterback, Daniel Jones, back in good graces. And the fact, if you weren't trying to get a quarterback, why did you bring Russell Wilson in for a workout? Why did you have him come to the first place you stopped? Why was that? Like, let's start to add up some of the things that you did that indicate what you were trying to do, and now you're going to lie about it and say, oh, no, they never wanted a quarterback. Well, then why'd they waste all that money? Why did they go and do all the things? They were flying all over the country, Stormy.
No, you're correct. This report, by the way, just for anyone who hadn't seen it, came from Adam Schefter. He was on the Pat McAfee show earlier today, and he said, I believe the Giants wanted Joe Alt to fall to them. And it kind of made it seem like
He did not say, I know. He said, I believe. See, you got to really understand terminology here. Like, if he would have come out and said, they were taking Alt 1,000%. Mm-hmm. Then it's, I believe. See, and that creates some doubt. So then the Giants can come in and say to Daniel Jones, we did our research, but we were never doing that. Mm. Well, why didn't you try to trade with Arizona for Joe Alt?
And is there that significant of a drop-off between, like, from an offensive line standpoint, between Joe Alt and J.C. Latham, who was sitting right there at that time as well?
Great question, Stormy. If you wanted to, why'd you take when it's a tackle-rich draft, there was only one tackle you liked? Did you watch Evan Neal play? You don't have any tackles. You got Luminor playing right tackle for you. I like Jermaine Luminor, but that's not the answer. Come on. I mean, it's just all to kind of make up to Daniel Jones, kiss, kiss, and be nice.
And they're just deciding to forget about the 85 sacks that unit let up last year. You do you, New York Giants. Wow. That's a wrap for us today. We'll be back here same time, same place tomorrow. Stick around for Sharp Money next.